Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat, and on Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Our text and voicemail line's at 331-979-1369. Hit us up with all of your texts, your voicemails, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Matt, happy Friday to you back here. NBA basketball, more importantly, Chicago Bulls basketball is back tonight against the Orlando Magic. I'm at least excited to see what Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Otto Porter Jr. and company put together. And at least there's a small segment of me that's excited to see what Jim Boylan is going to say in these last 24 games. How many more Jim Boylan-isms are we going to get? How many new Jim Boylan-isms are we going to get from this season? Are we going to squeeze out of him? But first and foremost, how you doing? Excited for the weekend?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Excited to see some Bulls basketball back on the floor tonight after what felt like pretty long break. We were coming into the All-Star break talking about how much we needed it as Bulls fans, and we definitely did. But I'm excited. It definitely got me in the mood. I watched a lot of the games last night, some of the first NBA action back from All-Star break. You know, Rockets-Lakers was very entertaining. We had, two of the best teams in the East, Bucks and Celtics, in a pretty fascinating game. Like, I missed NBA basketball, man. I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, that Rockets-Lakers game was... That was a strange game last night. Man, that was... That Rockets team is...
They're trash, man.
James Harden is doing something unbelievable. Yeah, that...
Yeah, so he got his 30th point right before fouling out late in that game last night and kept that streak going of 30-point games, which everybody's obsessing over. And it is impressive, but I have no faith in that Rockets team, man. They just crumble. They played like, you know, Harden was, you know, arguing about the calls, and he fouled out, Chris Paul fouled out, and they had some interesting words to say about the refs after the game, and that, you know, we'll get to the whole NBA refs conversation later in today's show, but they played like crap. The Rockets played like crap down the stretch of that game. Their offensive execution completely fell apart. I have no faith in them as a playoff team in the Western Conference. And we were given a fresh reminder last night. I don't know if you saw that particular play, but Chris Paul basically trying to break LeBron's arm on that play underneath the basket. We were all reminded that CP3 is one of the dirtiest players in this game, and he did it to his best friend, LeBron. CP3 is trash. I'm going to go out there and say it. I hate the guy. No respect for Chris Paul.
Isn't that a good look for him doing that? And then last year, staging that whole thing with the going behind the scenes at the Staples Center?
Charles, I know why you're laughing. I played in the NBA for 16 years, and I've been on TV for 18 years. This is the first time I ever heard police presence. They got a police presence? Are you kidding me? Wait, come on, man.
Numerous social media reports that LAPD was called.
LAPD was called.
See, these two, man.
Come on, man.
You know why they're laughing.
Come on, man.
Because they would... Party.
It's still my favorite story of all time. That is still
the
my
locker
favorite
room fight
thing of all time.
Oh, so man. Good.
I don't
Hello,
know what
police.
Is. I don't know why.
Hello, police. Chris Paul trying to beat me up. this is Blake Griffin. Chris Paul trying to get in the locker room. Get down here and save me.
And then if you didn't, and then on top of all of that, the sideshow on TNT last night too, with Charles Barkley just
Charles Barkley's his own show, man.
Oh my God, his comments about Jussie Smollett and Liam Neeson. Charles Wilden out there, man. I love it.
Charles Barkley, man. Yeah, and like he wouldn't let it go either. He wouldn't let it go. They just kept going to different segments throughout the show, and he kept bringing it up and just kept digging and digging. Oh, man. Yeah, that show on TNT, they just keep getting better and better, and they just have a good nucleus, and they know what they're doing. So, but we'll get into some of that stuff. Specifically, you had mentioned what we were going to talk about. ESPN published a really good story about talking specifically about the refs and the talking about the story about Tim Donaghy and, you know, his connection in gambling and getting caught on betting on games and fixing games. And so we'll talk specifically about that. But first, we want to preview the Bulls Magic game tonight. That the first question I had off the top of my head, and I don't know why I was thinking about this, but more so than what's going to go on the court tonight, if the Magic don't turn things around relatively soon, and not that any team would move out of the market that they're in right now, but if you had to pick one of these teams in the NBA right now, would the Magic be susceptible to be one of those teams plucked out of their market and be moved to another city? Or could you think, what other team do you think would be most likely to be a team picked up and moved out of their market? Would it be Orlando? Because I keep pointing to them as the team, like, I don't know if anybody really gives two shits about the Magic.
I mean, no, nobody really cares. Like, they haven't been relevant since the young prime of Dwight Howard when they made one trip to the finals. And after that team fell apart, they've just been languishing in NBA, not even mediocrity. Just, you know, they've been a basement dweller for years. They are right now making a push in a weak Eastern Conference, you know, like, I think it's like seeds 6 through 10 in the East right now are separated by just a couple of games, like 2.5 games, I think. And they have been playing really well. Like, they took a 5-game winning streak into the All-Star break. They got a 5-game winning streak coming into tonight's game against us. And, you know, they have an All-Star in Vucevic, who's been playing amazing ball this season. He, you know, he had a 20-10 double-double against the Bulls the last time these teams played in January. Yes, the Orlando Magic might be a team that nobody cares about, including their own fan base. But as far as teams most likely to have to leave their small markets or owners choosing to move the team, another one you got. I mean, the Pelicans in their Anthony Davis situation, they lose AD, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Now, like, nobody in that town cares about the Pelicans. That is a New Orleans Saints town through and through. So, you know, I know it's, you know, the same ownership. You know, Saints and Pels owned by the same guy. You might be talking about selling off the Pelicans and you know, letting some other owner come in and take them to a different market. I don't know about you, Jordan. I really want a team back in Seattle. I want the Supersonics to come back.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. And whether or not that comes with an NHL team up there too, but I think that's almost set in stone. It's just a matter of time now. But I'm curious whether, and like you said, the Pelicans, the Magic makes sense. Like, the Magic had their height when they had Dwight Howard, but I think everything that's fallen flat on their face since that happened, like, I was looking at their ticket sales, I was looking at their attendance numbers, and all the moves that they've made coinciding with that, like giving up Tobias Harris, giving up Victor Oladipo, all of these players that have come through their system, and it's like,
yeah,
you've let all of these guys go and made terrible moves for your franchise, and now you can't fill your building in a city that's right outside of the happiest place on earth. Do people really care about basketball in Orlando? I don't really think so. And so that's why I'm like, maybe they won't be plucked out of there, but if we're talking about small markets, Orlando seems like a prime position to, if they had to move a team, maybe it is Orlando, but the Pelicans certainly another team. But that was a curious conversation, and maybe we can see tonight when the Bulls are there what the crowd actually looks like. But right now, if you're going by attendance percentage, the Magic sit at 19th at 92% across the NBA with an average attendance base of 17,300.
Well, maybe it's just because everybody in Orlando has so many options. Like, yeah, we could go to the Magic game, or we could go to the Harry Potter World or whatever it is that they have down in Universal Studios these days.
Maybe Robin Lopez will go sign with the Magic so he can go on his off nights or off days, go hang out in Disney World all the time. So I don't know. But speaking of the basketball play on the floor, this Magic team, very interesting. Last couple times the Bulls have seen them. First time, Bulls beat them. Second time, Bulls embarrassed by them. That was one of the games that we've kind of gone back and looked back at and said, you know, outside the two Warriors games, outside the Celtics game, Matt, that was one game that I've circled on the list of games this season and said, really, that's one of the more embarrassing losses all season. So I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, it was 112-84 was the final, and the Bulls lost by that margin at home to, at the time, a 17-20 Orlando team.
Yeah, I would hope that this Bulls team comes out with a different type of edge tonight. And makes at least certain that the starting unit plays up to par with their starting unit and doesn't get embarrassed in the fashion that they did and laid a complete goose egg against a team that you should not get embarrassed against. Like, I get it. The Magic have been pretty competitive, and they got Vucevic, they got Aaron Gordon, and they got a couple other nice pieces, and they've been halfway decently competitive. But still, at the same time, it's the Orlando Magic. And you were in competitive games, and you actually beat them early on in this season. And you shouldn't get blown out and embarrassed the way that they did in the second time that they faced off against them. So what are you looking for tonight in this first game back? I'm looking for specifically, how are they going to contain Vucevic? How are they going to stop him? How is that front court going to look? And specifically, how is Markkanen going to play after this long stretch of being off? Like, that was my biggest concern last year. Guys played well for a long period of stretch. And then when the Bulls had anywhere between 7 to 10 days off, where guys went out with like a slight injury or had to go away to miss for a personal reason, when they came back, it's like then 2 weeks went by and it took them some time to get back acclimated to regular basketball things again. So I'm hoping that this Bulls team didn't miss a beat and we're coming back and it's exactly what we saw from last
week. Yeah, I mean, ideally you would like to see another game added to what is now a fairly small sample size of what, like four games since the Porter trade, where the offense has been better. The offense has been more spaced. Otto's shooting the lights out of the building and creating great opportunities for Markkanen. Boylan is doing some more things with using Otto Porter to use Markkanen as just a guy who pops open off of screens, as opposed to trying to make Markkanen go to work on the block and fight trying to struggle through watching Markkanen try and establish post positioning and not getting the good enough entry passes or not doing enough work on the block himself. We've seen Markkanen play really well since Otto arrived. And that's not a coincidence, I don't think. But again, small sample size. So you would like to see that trend continue tonight, because this is a very different team than the last time these two teams played. I think you're right on as far as what the Bulls will try to do, trying to slow down Vucevic and how big of a handful that is. The last time these teams played, Wendell wasn't hurt yet, and he was in the starting lineup, but he only played 13 minutes. Remember the outcry? This was that game when the Bulls lost by a billion at home and Wendell only played 13 minutes. And we're sitting here saying, how the hell did Wendell only play 13 minutes in that game? Robin Lopez, you know, I don't see him being able to slow down Vucevic all that much. He's been very efficient on the offensive end in this recent stretch where he's taken over the starting center spot, Lopez has. But defensively, he can't limit Vucevic. I don't think Markkanen can either. But, you know, it's we've seen this story a lot over the course of the last couple of years, whether it was Fred or now under Boylan, with all the injuries, all of the different transactions, players arriving and leaving, that when the Bulls revisit an opponent since the last time they played that opponent, the box score, you go back and look at it, you're like, half the guys aren't even on this team anymore. Half the people in this starting lineup. Holiday played 26 minutes in that game. Campaign was still on this roster. Hutch was playing 22 minutes off the bench. He's on the shelf now. Blakeney played 24 minutes off the bench. We haven't heard from Blakeney in months. Like, things are different. So maybe the Bulls can take an Orlando team that's playing very well, or at least were playing well before the All-Star break, and give them a good game tonight.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Orlando team. So we're talking about last four games, and that's kind of the sample size I've been using since the Otto Porter trade. Matt, the Orlando Magic going into the All-Star break, the number one team in net rating. over that four-game stretch. They had an offensive rating of 118.6, a defensive rating of 92.7, for a net rating of 25.9. That's number one in the NBA during that four-game stretch. So they were playing unbelievable going into the All-Star break. Those four games they played, the Milwaukee Bucks, they had a win against them. They played the Atlanta Hawks, a win against them, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Charlotte Hornets to wrap up.
They beat... Okay, I thought they had a win over the Pacers, too, recently. I think that was maybe it before that stretch, but yeah, like they've been beating good teams.
So yeah, if you stretch it even back farther, if you go back six games before the All-Star break, they beat the Minnesota Timberwolves even before that Milwaukee Bucks game, and then they had a close loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder all the way back on February 5th. But still, regardless, they've been playing good basketball, five-game winning streak coming into the All-Star break. True shooting percentage nearly at 60% for an entire team. So, like you said, like stopping Vucevic, stopping Jonathan Isaac, who's been playing pretty decent. All of these little pieces seem to be adding up for the Orlando Magic. So, and finding a way to stop Aaron Gordon as well, who's been kind of having off and on nights. But yeah, continuing to shoot threes, continuing to find open lanes for Zach LaVine to drive, and continuing to make sure Lauri Markkanen is keeping that aggressive mentality, and it hasn't kind of shifted his focus since going to All-Star Weekend. You know, remaining focused, remaining determined, and continuing that path on going into this game. I'm just looking at what the Orlando Magic have been doing, and they've been a pretty solid three-point shooting team over that four-game stretch going into the All-Star break. You know, in those five wins, they shot 42.3%, 37%, 35%, 40%, and 43.6% from three on an average of about 33 threes per game. So the Bulls are going to have to be a good defensive perimeter team tonight in order to stop the Magic. So you think they can get that done? Like, they haven't been all that great. Otto's helped a little bit on the perimeter. And, you know, according to a basketball index,
Otto's shooting like 60% from downtown, 62%.
Right. And no, I'm talking defensively. And according to Basketball Index, who does a really great job of like grading all of these guys, this year, he's been one of the five best, according to their stats, he's been one of the five best perimeter defenders from in the entire NBA. They have him graded as an A. So that's pretty crazy to me. So he's at least upgraded the Bulls as a perimeter defender there in that starting lineup. We'll see if that continues to help the Bulls, but certainly his length and being a wing player that the Bulls desperately needed, that'll help.
Well, yeah, and compare that to other, you know, efficiency defensively at the wing spot that the Bulls have had this season. You know, Holiday's considered a solid two-way player, but his defense was not great the season before they traded him. You got, you know, undersized guards playing the wing for extended minutes like Shaq Harrison, and then, you know, who else? That's how shallow. Chandler Hutchison, a rookie trying his darndest but clearly in way over his head, had a couple of nice flashes on the defensive end. But when you talk about efficiency and competency at the wing spot defensively for the Bulls this season, it's been a ghost town until Porter arrived. He's clearly an upgrade on that end too.
What do you think, last question I have on this, and you can specifically talk about maybe tonight or just in the last 24 games. Very curious because we didn't talk about it the last two games. Or the last two episodes. Do you think Jim Boylan's going to press the starters to play this heavy minutes load like he did the last four games? Or do you think he's going to lighten that load a little bit and allow the bench to just go out there and see what happens, regardless of who he has to play on that bench? Because he has to be mindful of what the injuries are. And guys dealing and battling with the Zach LaVine with the ankle, Chris Dunn being like, basically have to be wrapped in bubble wrap the entire time he's out there. He's got to be mindful of that and not have to press guys to play 35 to 38 minutes a night. Do you think he's going to continue the path that he's been going down, or does he just not care and he just wants to see the starters play as many minutes as possible and whatever happens, happens?
I mean, they don't have a bench right now. If you're being honest and realistic about where the Bulls are, the starting five now, even with our recent downtrend on our faith in Chris Dunn, is a pretty interesting unit since Otto arrived, and a very efficient unit through a small four-game sample size. The bench is a disaster. So, I mean, it's not necessary for Boylan to play the starters a quadrillion minutes, but we have seen recently he has really cut that rotation short, and he is not playing his bench a lot of minutes because he knows that the bench is trash. So for a team that's destined for the lottery instead of the playoffs, you don't want to see him, like, you know, really overworking guys, and especially, as you mentioned, Jordan, with all the injuries that that you have to take into account this season, guys who are on the shelf and guys who maybe are playing after being injured or playing through minor injuries, Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn. There's no benefit of overworking and overplaying guys. At the same time, talking about what you want to see tonight and over the final 24 games, you would like to see a continuation of some of that chemistry that develops and exists with Otto, LaVine, Lauri Markkanen. Like, those three guys playing well together. And you have to play them real minutes to see that development take place.
That's fine. And I'm just looking at the minutes breakdown. Zach LaVine, over that four-game stretch going into the All-Star break, 35.8 minutes. Lauri Markkanen, same exact minutes total. Otto Porter Jr., 34.9. Chris Dunn, 31.9. And then it drops off. Robin Lopez, 25.3. Wayne Seldon coming off the bench, 23 minutes. Ryan Arcidiacono averaging 21 minutes. And then it drops off heavy. TLC, 16 minutes. Cristiano Felicio's been averaging 14 minutes a game. And then Shaq Harrison with 12.4. But everybody else has been averaging less than 2 minutes a game. So, yeah, he's clearly going with only a 10-man rotation. And then everybody else has just been coming in the last minute or two, where he's just been subbing guys in if they either have a blowout win or a blowout loss. So, clearly just cutting it down to 10 minutes, or cutting it down to a 10-man rotation. But, yeah, that's what I'm okay with it. If Markkanen and Zach LaVine are fully healthy, and Otto Porter Jr. are fully healthy, and are cool with going out there and just playing the full minute load, that's fine. I'm just very, very worried about Zach LaVine's ankle. That's the only thing I'm worried about. But if he's good to go, then that's fine.
Obviously, if they feel like it's a concern, if LaVine's ankle is really bothering him, and you and I were talking about, you know, why did they put him back in that game? And not only LaVine, but also recently, I can't remember who, somebody else was like playing through clearly like a hard injury. Oh, it was Chris Dunn when he had that really nasty fall, remember? When it was like he had a bruised backside. This was like right before the All-Star break. And like Jim Boylan wasn't even aware of the fact that Dunn was like struggling so much that he had to commit a foul to stop the clock to get out of the game. And then they put him in the locker room, and then they let him go back in the game. So, of course, Bulls fans are weary right now of how the team and the medical and training staff handle injuries. And also Chandler Hutchison's situation, playing 41 minutes on that broken toe, and Wendell Carter Jr. being misdiagnosed. Obviously, fans have a right to be nervous about players playing through injuries when there's no need to. But if they are healthy, then I think they should play.
So if they say they're 100% ready to go, then stick their asses out there and let's get those minutes rolling. Because like we said, only 24 games to evaluate what these guys got, and they haven't played all that much together, you know? Lauri Markkanen missing a huge chunk of the season. Chris Dunn missing a huge chunk of the beginning of the season. So you need to see these minutes stack up together, whether it's at the back end of this season or not. So very interesting. But it's good to have Bulls basketball back. Whether you're excited for it or not, Bulls fans, it's back tonight. So we'll get to see this in action. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but we come back. We're going to talk about an interesting story that was published by ESPN. One that Matt and I, it caught our eye and we're fascinated by it. So we want to dive into that a little bit deeper on our last segment before we get out of here for the weekend. Drop us your text, your voicemails at 331-979-1369. Hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Be back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
You can't put a false report of a guy being injured and he's not injured. You have to have an actual excuse. That's an NBA rule. I think an NBA rule, if you
what
come out with
it,
you can't put a false report of saying someone is hurt and they're not.
What you say, Chuck?
I tell you what, though, man.
Okay, all right.
There must be some good damn sandwiches at Subway. If you're going to go out there at 3-4 in the morning to get them.
Go grab me.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up social media, our text and voicemail line, wherever you want to be a part of the conversation. Hit us up 331-979-1369 on social media at Locked On Bulls. Matt, have you ever been a big gambler? Been a big sports gambler? Cards, roulette, whatever it is. Are you a casino guy? Are you a sports gambler guy? More often than not, not really. Has it ever piqued your interest?
I mean, like occasionally, if you know I'm in Atlantic City or Vegas for you know a buddy's bachelor event or whatever, I'll do a little bit of gambling. I don't gamble regularly on sports. I enjoy playing poker. You know, nothing ever super high stakes. Just you know, in home games with my buddies. You know, and you know, I'm very competitive. Even I'm sure you are aware, as a sports talker, as a sports debater, I am a very competitive person. As a fan, I'm a very competitive person. I still am bitter and dark and depressed about a Bears playoff loss that happened more than a month ago now. I hate losing more than I love winning. So I have always tried to prevent myself and restrain myself from doing a whole lot of gambling connected to the world of sports because I care too much as it is, without the money involved. I just do not let myself bet on sports. I do a lot of fantasy football. I'm usually in three or four fantasy football leagues every season with money in all of them for the most part, and some higher stakes than others. And that is the one piece of sports gambling that I let myself do because I enjoy taking part in it and knowing that I'm going to do everything I can in my power to tilt the winnings toward my favor. Because in fantasy football, there is luck involved, yes, but there is also skill and dedicated time to doing the work behind putting yourself in the positions to be lucky or take advantage of those opportune moments. But as far as like sports betting, no, can't do it.
Sports betting has always intrigued me. It was more fun. I had more fun with it in college than I do now. I just don't have time to keep up with it. And I'll do it once in a while, but it's just, you know, you got to be up to date with the lines and you got to be up to date with all the stats. And I'd probably be better at it. And like I've told people here, like it's easier to do it when you're more connected with one team. But it's difficult to I can't do it with doing it with the Bulls or with any of the teams I love. Like, trying to bet on the rooting interest or betting against the rooting interest of your teams, it's too hard for me to do that. But like you had mentioned, fantasy football is just, it's too fun. I've been in a league for, I think, it's going on our seventh year in a keeper league, fantasy football league, that I've done with a bunch of buddies from college from my fraternity. So that's turned into something that, you know, we can bond over, we can stay connected. So that's been something that's been awesome. I'm in a four league fantasy football where it's NHL, MLB, NBA, and NFL. You can make trades across all of the different leagues. It's wild. And so it's a buy-in, $100 each league. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. I'm also in an MLB league. That's crazy too. But the one thing I never got into was the NBA side of fantasy. And I know we talked about potentially starting a Locked On Bulls fantasy basketball league. Maybe we'll try to coordinate that better over the summer and start something up for next year, but I think that would be pretty cool to do. But I ask anyway because sports betting has become very prevalent over the last, I don't know, what, 3 to 5 years as far as what the national scope is and hitting mainstream and actually becoming legalized. And quick note here in Illinois, it seems like Illinois wants to try to legalize that here in this state and actually bring bookmakers and people giving them legal spots to do that here in the state of Illinois.
And so the NBA, more so than any other league right now, is really at the forefront of that, much like they're at the forefront of a lot of progressive movements for American sports. Even, you know, we're hearing about the talk of this like business relationship between the NBA and MGM Grand as the, you know, the league's official sports betting partner. Which, you know, even a few years ago just seemed like a crazy idea that would never happen, but it's going to happen.
It's just stupid money. There is just stupid money in sports betting and just casinos and gambling and all of that. It's just it you can't even wrap your brain around how much money there is. And personally, and I don't want to get into it that much, but I hope they bring it to Illinois and I hope they legalize it here. I think it would be great for the state. But anyway, a quick side note, because we were talking about Zion Williamson yesterday, there's an Australian bookmaker that when he went out yesterday, they actually refunded everybody who bet on that game their money and credit as a way to advertise and get people to bet on their site. So I thought that was a cool marketing aspect to what they were trying to do to get people to start betting with their site. So that, sorry, that was just like a marketing aspect to what bookmakers are trying to do to get people to sign up, bet, and use their sites. But that was an Australian bookmaker out there. But yeah, the people are trying to do everything to get people to gamble. But anyway, we're bringing all of this up because a story has surfaced, and it's been a story for a long time in the NBA about former referee Tim Donaghy, about conspiracy of him for a long time about fixing games in the NBA and whether or not he was betting on games and fixing these games in order to win games, to make a lot of money. And so, Matt, they finally published an article revealing how he was doing this. So this article is super long, and we're not going to dive into everything that was explained because I feel like people would get the grasp of it by going and reading this on ESPN.com.
Wait, it's a long read, but if you're interested in the subject matter, you should absolutely read it. It's worth
100%, 100%. So for maybe our younger listeners, or for not our diehard NBA fans, or maybe for fans that forgot about this story, give us a quick summary about who this guy is, what he was doing, and why he got away with what he was doing for so long, and what tripped him up. What tripped him up and ultimately got him caught doing this, and kind of the backstory on all of it.
Well, what got him, you know, so he came from a part of the country that is known for breeding NBA officials. The Delaware County area, just outside Philadelphia, which some call Delco. That's what they referred to it to in this ESPN column, which also saw the likes of Joey Crawford and many other NBA referees that went on to have long careers officiating NBA games, all happened to come from this same little niche community, which I found very interesting. I didn't know that element of the story when I read this. Made his NBA debut as an official at just 27. So the guy climbed the ranks fast and knew all along he wanted to be a ref. And essentially, it started as a simple, like, two- or three-man job with him and a middleman between him and a bookie. Fascinating character, this dude named Batista. And your question of how did it eventually get so out of hand? Well, more and more people started to pick up on what was going on. More and more money was getting thrown into this system of, you know, Donaghy essentially saying, all right, I'm going to use code to tell my guy, my middleman, either bet the home team or bet the away team. And I'm going to do what I can to make sure that that spread is covered for the team, you know, that I'm officiating against. And most of it was, you know, looking back at the evidence, Donnie calling a lot of fouls versus very few fouls, usually in favor of the home team, because that is a little less eyebrow raising. And it got to the point where this dude Batista was so obsessed with this gambling venture that they had gotten into that he started to make what the bettors call head fake bets, in order to try to swing the line so that when he made the big bet, it would be the spread would have grown immensely. So you start the night before or early morning and the line is, you know, say 1.5 or 2, and encouraging lots of people to bet one way, all of a sudden that spread grows, and then you bet the other way from your initial head fake bet. I mean, it's a pretty simple stuff that they were doing, but all of a sudden those huge swings that Batista was allowing to happen because he became so obsessed with trying to use that strategy became noticeable. And then the mob got involved, and the mob was using this. One of the main New York mob families, I'm pretty sure it was the Gambino mob family, became involved and was using this to essentially just as a huge, you know, slush fund for their cash that allowed them to put that cash into other crimes involving like murder and stuff. And then that's when people started to sort of pay attention. And it was initially a leak from someone talking about the mob who told him, hey, the mob made me aware that there's a fix going on in the NBA and it's all tied to this one ref. Crazy stuff.
It is wild. And I had to take it one step further than that. I always try to do this when I'm analyzing it and bring it to present day. And like, think about the likelihood of this being able to be pulled off now. How can you pull this off now? And would this be able be likely in today's era? To me, it's like, absolutely not. There's no way. Think about how many people on social media could be pulling all of this. Like, we think about it all the time right now. Don't even take it in the aspect of trying to point shave or to fix games. Think about all the people out there that aren't even doing this as a job right now, like covering sports or doing any of that, that are just fans that love to dig up clips or to stir the pot or to start shit. Think about all the people that would catch on to this and be like, check out all these stats that are lining up and all the conspiracy theories that would be out there that would catch somebody in an instant. And maybe I'm being naive at this point. Maybe something is happening that we don't know about. And that doesn't go for just sports betting. Maybe there is stories that are happening behind the scenes that we have no idea about. But to me, it's very, very hard to believe that somebody could pull off a scheme or something to this effect that we wouldn't know about or the internet wouldn't find out about relatively quickly. Like, in an era that social media was just at its start, like 2006, 2007, like YouTube had just launched. Twitter had just at its baby launch. Facebook was just at its start. MySpace was like the number one platform. Like, we're talking about social media at its birth. And that's crazy to think about, Matt. Like, that this was 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, because when the, you know, and that's one of the things that David Stern in this column was sort of being kind of embarrassed about, was that the fact that the feds picked up on this before the league's own internal, in you know, investigative team and security team was able to pick up on this. Because this was happening, you know, originally it was just about the 2006-2007 season, which was the last one of what turned out to be like four seasons that Donaghy was doing this. And they went back and the column talks about how they watched all these hundreds of hours of game tape on games that Timmy officiated, looking for evidence of him not only, you know, because obviously, it was not cool that he was betting on games, but what they were looking for was evidence that he was fixing on the games that he was betting on, which they somehow concluded there wasn't substantial evidence to admit that or to come to that conclusion. When in today's era of social media, as you were saying, Jordan, you look at some of the examples they give of some of the games that he officiated and consecutive fouls being called or, you know, putting a certain player in foul trouble, getting them out of the game, and where the game was as far as what the score of the game was compared to the spread, it is pretty obvious based on that evidence that, yeah, this stuff was going on. And for those people who are sports fans on social media throughout the game and on Twitter, and like, that's become a big thing on NBA Twitter and professional sports Twitter, is bettors talking about bad beats. And certainly when officials are related to bad beats, whether, you know, and not saying that, oh man, these refs, you know, the fix was in and it ruined the spread, but just a controversial call of any kind from a ref having a profound effect on the spread and the results of the spread, that kind of stuff gets talked about on social media constantly now. So you're right in that maybe if this kind of thing were to happen now, it would get leaked and bubbled to the surface a lot quicker than it did 10 years ago.
It's unbelievable. And it's wild to think about. And like, you even go back to, and it's crazy that an official who is paid by the NBA to manage these games and to officiate these games at the highest level and supposed to be objective about all of this, and he's helping people win massive amounts of money by leveraging these games in these situations. Like, I'm looking at Yahoo Sports, who kind of broke this down a little bit better in it. And one of the things that they highlight from this article, it says, ESPN said it employers It employed researchers with an extensive background in officiating to closely watch all of these games and log the calls. Then they compared the imbalance of calls to the teams that had more betting dollars. And the site found that Donaghy tracked the record 23-3-4 of making calls that favored his bets. ESPN's statisticians found 6,105-1 odds. Like, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's blatantly true that he was actively fixing the games that he was betting on.
What's wild to me is that he was only getting paid
$2,000.
Two grand.
And the people making bets on those games were getting cashed out millions.
Mob mentality, man. Mob mentality. These guys were getting paid $30, $40, $50, $100,000 on these games. And these were hitting on 60, 70% of these bets.
Yeah.
And he was getting a $2,000 payout? A $2,000 payout, that's it?
Yeah, it's laughable. But you feel no sympathy for Donaghy because by all accounts in this column and even before that, what I had known about this guy, total sleazeball. Like, completely ignored his wife and his children, was a degenerate gambler outside of his job as an NBA official, you know, would be at the casinos and at the golf courses, drinking, gambling all the time. Like, the dude sounds like a douchebag. So, no sympathy for him, only making $2,000 per game per fix when everybody else involved in this was making hand over fist more. But, that was interesting to me. The thing that I find most interesting about this column, though, Jordan, and I want your thoughts on this as well, is the fact that when this first came to light and the Fed said, all right, now that we know that this dude Donaghy is involved, we're going to try and find out who else. And especially considering, as I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, the fact that so many of these NBA officials all came from the same place, that Delaware County area, and all knew each other very well. It seems so unlikely to me that there weren't others. And the very juicy detail from this column that I didn't know about until reading it is that what most people believe is the NBA leaked to the New York Post, who then, of course, printed it the next day, that the feds were planning to do this secretive investigation league-wide and looking at all of the officials and even going so far as to put a wire on Tim Donaghy while he talked to his fellow NBA officials and trying to get them to incriminate themselves. And the NBA said, oh, this is what the feds are planning to do. We have to protect ourselves. We have to protect the brand of our league. And in our best interest, we're going to leak this story to the Post so that it is no longer the secret objective. Everyone knows, and it will tip off other NBA officials who we don't know if they're getting into this dirty kind of stuff like Donaghy, their colleague. But if they are, in case they are, they now know if you're talking to Donaghy, don't say anything incriminating because the feds are looking into us, which is a very shady thing for the NBA to do.
Yeah, well, that's partly covering their own asses, right? Because like, if you kind of know about this in... You're not stepping in right away and like having somebody that's employed by your league that's messing with the integrity of the entire game and making all of this money, and you fall down a slippery slope of all of this, and then it's not just one guy and you don't know if it's just one guy and having mob connections to it too. It's just, this is what I think baseball was dealing with too, like with Pete Rose and not knowing if he was doing this with his games and like what was going on there. And that's why I think a lot of people had some pushback as far as leagues sponsoring betting sites and being open to the idea of partnering with sports betting is how is that going to affect the integrity overall? And like for somebody new age, Matt, like me, younger person, and you too, younger, I've been completely open to the idea of just sports betting and professional sports should go hand in hand together. But I understand the repercussions and the pushback from it because of this, because of the integrity of the game. And that's why for a long time, a lot of people said, like, do you really think it's a good idea to have professional sports teams miles from the Las Vegas Strip? Do you think that that's really a good idea to do? I can understand it seeing stories like this, but at the same time, like that's part of what's going on right now in the new age of sports. But this story is just completely wild, and for this guy to continue doing what he was doing for the longest time, I mean, and only get, like, the wildest thing to me, Matt, is just, dude, you are only getting $2,000 to do this. Like, you're only getting paid $2,000. $2,000 to fix games at the highest level. Matt, would you, if you were an NBA official, would you take $2,000 to fix a game?
Well, no, I mean, if I were an NBA official, I wouldn't fix a game, plain and simple.
Well, if you were in this guy's situation, though, how much would you have to be paid in order to take a risk at this high of a level, though?
No dollar, like, no, none. I would not do it. And I'm not trying to, like, stand on some pedestal right now. I'm just saying, if in a, you know, a hypothetical, you know, fantasy world where I am an NBA official, I'm not fixing games. I'm not taking money to fix games. That's just completely unethical and amoral, and I wouldn't do it.
No, I agree with you, and I wouldn't do it either. But I'm saying, like, if you were out there, like, if you're gonna do this, why would you do it for such a small amount of money? Like, that is just, to me, it's so dumb.
Well, I think part of it was,
it doesn't add up to the risk. That's what I'm getting.
He was trying to keep it small.
True, because he didn't want to get caught.
He was trying to keep this under wraps because he didn't want to get caught. So, you know, when you're a full-time NBA official and you're, you know, officiating several games a week, an extra $2,000 in your pocket on a nightly basis, I mean, it's not chump change. And it also prevents lots of watching eyes getting, you know, going your way if all of a sudden, because that was the other part of the story, is that his, you know, at his then wife, who was quoted throughout the column, saying she started finding these huge wads of $100 bills, which is cash, 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 in his official NBA official's referee's jacket that he would, like, come home from the game wearing. And he's just stuffing cash in his pockets, literally stuffing wads of cash in his pocket, lining his pockets of his NBA official's jacket. Like, and so he clearly wasn't even all that careful about it. So, of course, he eventually got caught. But to go back to the, you know, would this happen today versus why did it take so long for people to figure out about this then in the age of social media? Would the NBA ever put themselves at risk for something like this again in a world where sports betting is now legal? To me, Jordan, it goes back to the point that, like, this didn't actually happen all that long ago. In the timeline of what technology and social media is now in its connection to the world of sports compared to 10 years ago, yes, 10 years ago is a long time. But it was only 10 years ago, and guess what? Like, Joey Crawford just retired a couple years ago. Joey Crawford was in this league for a long time after the fact. And Joey Crawford is a guy who many people throughout the years of his career wondered, is it not only that Joey Crawford wants to steal the spotlight for himself with all of his antics in these games and officiating big games, playoff games, NBA Finals games, but, like, go back and look at some, like, LeBron James's playoff record in games officiated by Joey Crawford versus games not officiated by Joey Crawford. And people, just go look that up in case you have never heard about that. Or other referees who are tied to that, you know, Delaware County area where Donnie and all these other NBA refs come from, who are still in the league officiating today. And going back to the NBA putting a squash on that investigation and wiring Donaghy, to me, it is so unlikely that more of this wasn't going on at the time and that there aren't still in the NBA today veteran officials who were involved back then who haven't been caught. I truly believe that that is the case.
Wild time with David Stern as commissioner, too. That was just like, I don't know. It's just, it blows my mind. And I also think about it too, now that I'm, like, racking my brain of other things that have happened in sports as far as, like, people being paid off and moving and shaking of different events. And, like, now I'm thinking of, like, FIFA, like, in order to get certain spots of where the World Cup is going to be held. Like, think about FIFA.
FIFA is corrupt on so many levels. Like, we don't have time to get into that.
Right, but just as that specific example, how much corruption was in that? And that's still going on.
Right.
So, maybe it is a little bit naive for me to say that in today's era, this type of thing wouldn't happen because it still is going on in other sports leagues. It is kind of crazy when you think back, is like, this only happened, what, 12 years ago? If you're counting 2019, it was only like 11, 12 years ago. But that's what's crazy is social media is only it's only at its birth right now. It's like 10, 12 years old. And we're still getting that technology now. We're way more aware of things than we ever were before. And that's what's just, it's so wild to me to think about. It's like, this only happened 10 years, 12 years ago. And it's just, this whole story just blows my mind. And just reading through it, and I think a lot of people should read through this. It's just, it's crazy. And you know what, Matt? This reminds me, and this is totally off base from sports, but there's another story about how McDonald's ran a scam for the Monopoly game. I don't know if you've ever read this story or not, but it's really good. And it's a super detailed story similar to this, but it talks about how McDonald's and this one guy ran this scam for the Monopoly pieces. And he would go around the country and take all these Monopoly pieces, win all these prizes, basically scam all these people out of all of this money and all of these prizes. And just basically to sum it all up is he would win all these prizes, win all of this money, fake that all these people were winning all of this. And in reality, none of it was true and none of it was real. And it's a mind-blowing story, and I'll tag it on social media for people to read it. But it came out a couple of months ago, and I was sitting there reading it, and I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. I can't even believe this actually happened. This should be a movie. So I'll tag it for other people to read it, but this was just another case outside of sports that I was like sitting there reading it to myself, and I was like, holy shit, I can't even believe this happened.
Not to laugh at your naivete, Jordan, but of course that shit goes on. There are always con men out there, and there are always bettors trying to get a piece of the pie of whatever that con is. And of course it seeps into professional sports. Of course it does. The other thing that I found interesting was once the feds got the New York crime family and put a big hit on them when they found out that they were involved, and they were the ones who eventually led to being tipped off about the whole Donaghy scandal, they took out a huge portion of their money making. So, like, they put a big dent on one of the biggest crime families of New York because of the NBA thing. But then once they got that, then they turned their focus to continuing their pursuit of NBA crime or of New York crime families and the real horrible stuff that they were doing, which was not being involved in illegal fixing and gambling, but, you know, murder and extortion and all that horrible, horrible stuff. So, like, once the feds got what they wanted out of the NBA investigation, they just left it alone, which is another reason why I am so fascinated to say, like, you know, what if they kept going? What if they kept digging? What else would they have found? Who else would they have found to be, included and guilty in this fixing ring? And, like, that's another example of why I feel like the NBA got off easily on this 12 years ago. The other part from the column that I found fascinating was that when Donaghy wanted to get a book published talking about his experience through all of this and come clean, more so than he did in the actual investigation and trial at the time, the NBA killed it. Like, he had a deal with a publisher, and the NBA killed that publishing deal because they didn't want Tim Donaghy's words about this out there.
That's interesting. And I wonder how much of that is the NBA just didn't want to dig because they didn't want to ruin even more of their reputation and finding out. It's like,
yeah, they didn't want to dig because they were afraid of what they'd find, which is what I'm saying with,
ignorance is bliss.
Right, exactly. And that's why I'm saying, man, I do not believe for a second that it was a one-man operation as far as number of officials in the NBA that were involved. I don't believe that for a second.
Shout out to Adam Silver. He has completely revamped this league and turned it around. And at least for the most part, it's turned into, like, in a decade time from where it was to where it is now. I mean, it's done a complete 180 from where the spot is right where you're talking about. And I'm not surprised at all that and really, like, who would believe Tim Donaghy? Like, the stories would come out, and it would be fascinating to hear what he had to say. But at the same time, like, I think a lot of people would take it with a grain of salt and be like, all right, how much of this are we going to actually believe from this dude who's a degenerate? And also, you did ruin a lot of the integrity of the game by doing a lot of this shit. So, but yeah, man, it's fascinating. People who are connected with, not even just in basketball, but like in high corporations that are doing all of these scams. And it's just like, for the longest time, you realize the scams that are going on. It's just, it's crazy when these stories do come out. And that's why I brought up the McDonald's story too, because I was like, that Monopoly game had been going on forever. And that in particular just blew my mind.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, if you were, Joe Schmo American who thought that they could, go rags to riches by playing the McDonald's Monopoly game, then pardon my French, but you're a fucking moron.
Yeah, because there was like, what?
I'm going to get rich playing scratch-offs at the local bodega,
Jesus.
Dude. Yeah, you deserve your poverty, sir.
Oh, unless you're the dude in Michigan who owned the local convenience store and figure out, I don't know how he did that, but I don't know if you saw that local 60 Minutes where he figured out how to beat the game and made millions, Matt. I don't know if you saw that story, but you should check it out. Him and a local buddy owned a convenience store. They figured out this local scratch-off game, and they figured out how to beat the odds. And it was a game that was only sold in Michigan and Massachusetts. So they used to drive from Michigan to Massachusetts, buy all the lottery tickets up, and they were making millions of dollars over like 10 years' time. And the game got discontinued. Long story short, but when it finally did over these 10 years, he ended up making millions of dollars because he beat the system and he knew the game and how to play it. And it's wild. It's like, it's one in a billion shot that you would figure out how to beat the odds to this scratch-off game. So unless you're that guy, yeah, you're not winning shit.
You know, I'm fascinated to see what happens with legalized sports betting, man, and how it affects the NBA, because they have that ugly, blemish in their rearview mirror, and they've come a long way in correcting that. And as you said, Adam Silver has done a lot of different things to clean up the reputation of the league after that scandal broke. Even things like, giving Donald Sterling a lifetime ban when that stuff came out about all the horrible things he said about Magic Johnson, and how he felt about his mistress interacting with people of color in the NBA and their social circles. He was very swift in that decision. He did and said all the right things as far as talking about how Charlotte and the state of, North Carolina needed to better themselves with the, going along with the LGBTQ movement. And marching in their parades for their rights with the whole, I can't remember the name, it was like the H2 whatever, like the bathroom, the gender bathroom thing that like North Carolina horribly butchered. Like Adam Silver's done a lot of things, and now he has also been very vocal about things that are very interesting today, what we're talking about now with legalized sports betting, and also getting rid of the one and done rule, which is another thing with what Zion Williamson is doing right now with his other guys at Duke, Reddish and Barrett. And one of the things that is at the forefront of the conversation of how you transfer from amateur to professional basketball in this country, Adam Silver's handling a lot. And he was deputy commissioner under David Stern while all of this stuff was going on 12 years ago. The dude has seen and been through a lot working in the NBA. And I think for the most part, you have to give the guy credit, but he's going to have to make sure that he and his staff are very diligent in figuring out how to best turn this into a positive for the league, legalized sports betting, without jeopardizing their reputation based on what we know about what happened in this league in the past.
If anybody can do it, he can. And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world when that story got published about a week and a half ago, where it said, multiple owners have talked to Adam Silver asking him if he would be willing to switch leagues and go to the NFL, and he politely said, yeah, no thanks. Thanks, but no thanks. And
not
who would
me.
Blame him? Who would blame him?
That's a hard pass.
Yeah, he said it, and he put it perfectly. Absolutely hard pass. Good for him, though. He put it perfectly. He's like, why would I pass up on this? That the NBA has given me so much. This is a dream come true. You know, this has been something I couldn't have dreamed of as a kid. And so, yeah, he's done a great job. He has really has, and grown this league into something that I don't think any of us could have imagined 10 years ago, right, Matt? Like, the NFL was on its absolute climb. The MLB was doing really decent. The NHL was kind of floundering, and the NBA was doing okay, but it wasn't competing the way it is now. So, shout out to Adam Silver.
A lot of that has to do with the not only the way that he has handled the league in all the right ways, but and adopted the new age of social media. And the NBA has the loosest rules about sharing their content across social media, and that's why NBA Twitter is the best Twitter of all of this country's professional leagues. NBA Twitter is the best, and it is a big reason why the league as a whole is starting to become the most popular league in the country. Their stars are the biggest stars, and they are also the most accessible stars, and it is just a content free-for-all. And everybody loves it in the content-starved times that we are now living in.
He's empowered his players, too, more than anything else. You know, I think that's the biggest thing of it all, is he's allowed his players to be more empowered than any other league across any sport ever. And the most empowered ever before than we've ever seen in our lifetime, in any lifetime, which I think is the greatest for any sport. And they feel, and I mean, there's been a little bit of pushback with players conspiring to go to different teams or whatever, but for the most part, it's been the best thing for this league and for any sports league to allow your players to be more empowered than ever. So, shout out to Adam Silver. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks for hanging out with us all week long. You know, it's been a weird week. No basketball going on, but we've got Bulls basketball tonight against the Magic. Again, hit us up, 331-979-1369 on social media, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls on Instagram. We're streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Ernie, what's the most ridiculous one over there that's still living that you would say has no chance of happening?
Two black guys beating a black guy up.
And having a black guy.
Sorry. Speaking out loud. That's not on here, man. The Clippers will not make the playoffs. And
what kind of hats they had on, Chuck?
MAGA hats. I think that's probably it.
Okay.
The Lakers will not make the playoffs. The Kings will is the latest edition. Go ahead, Kenny. I can't believe you, Chuck.
You're paying with cash.
Chuckster.
You're paying with Chuckster. Cash or you write him a check, Chuck.
Never break America.
Chuckster. How?
America. Let me just tell you something.
What's that?
Do not commit crimes with checks. Come on, man. You cannot. If you're going to break the law, do not write a check.
Because you're writing a check that what? You're behind can't cash.
Yo, man, you cannot
cash up.
Hey, get cash, man. I never used an ATM. Now, I heard you can only get $200 out of the house.
$500. Charles, stop, literally.
You're
about to make a lot of stop to the ATM.
But you said, Chuck, America.
Do not write checks when you commit illegal activity.
I cannot believe that we touched them all right there. Circle the bag.
Hey, he just said he
touch every pillow.
He just said the Lakers would make the playoffs. Jesse said that.
America.
Hey, Jack, don't commit.
Jesse, you wasted all that damn time and money. You know what you should have did?
What's that?
Just went up in Liam Neeson's neighborhood. Could have solved all your damn problems. Charles, you got it.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com